listening to the Breakthrough Podcast. We hope you are encouraged by the message. Be sure to stick around for more at the end.
All right, so yeah, that was a really cute video, wasn't it? Like, I know you're sitting there thinking, what was the point of that? Where are you going with this? But I do have a point that I want to make, and this video, it shows how temptation works. It really does. It shows our human nature and how temptation works, and what better way than to tempt kids with marshmallows? It shows exactly how temptation works. It does a great job of that, but let's just put this in a more spiritual realm right now. Let's think of this. What if we knew that those marshmallows were actually laced with rat poison? Suddenly, that video is not so cute anymore. Suddenly, it's not quite so funny. Suddenly, it becomes the evil in it becomes very apparent, and we say, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa! No! Stop! Don't let them eat that! Don't let them! That's going to kill them!" And with each bite they take, we see death just getting a little closer and a little closer and a little closer. Because the reality of it is, guys, you take out those kids and you substitute us in there, and you take away the marshmallows and you add things like cheating, lying, drinking, partying, sex, pornography, things like this. You put those things in front of us, and we are in the same situation. We're in the same scenario. It's called high school. Instead of a little green room, it's called high school. And you know what it feels like, and you know, you've been there, and you know what it's like. And our enemy likes to put little marshmallows in front of us, and we like to play our sin off like it's cute, like it's fun. We like to brag about how much we drank last weekend. We like to brag about what girl we're getting with or what guy we're getting with. We like to brag about all these things. We like to talk big game because it makes us sound cool. And we think it's so cute because we're sitting there eating our little marshmallow sitting in front of us. But what the heavens see when they look down is they don't see a cute little kid eating a marshmallow. They see somebody partaking of nothing but evil. They see somebody, death is being dangled in front of them, and they're willingly taking it and taking it and taking it. And with every bite that we take, we come a little bit closer to death. Because that's what sin does. For the wages of sin is death. Death slowly and slowly kills you. And whenever the angels look, and whenever God looks down, he doesn't see something cute. He's not amused by you drank a case of beer in 3 hours. He's not amused by that. He don't think that's anything to brag about. He sees nothing but the evil in it. He sees what we would see if we saw those kids eating rat poison. That's what he sees. That's what the heavens look down and see. But we like to brag about it. We like to talk it up. We like to brag about how we just are so sinful. We take sin and make it this light little bitty thing that we can just put in our pocket, and it's not that big of a deal because I go to church. But the reality of it is, that's not how it was intended to be, and that's not what God wants for you. And the thing is, from birth, sin controls. It controls how we live. It controls every aspect of our lives. And we're all broken by our sin. That's no question. We've established that before. We know that. We're broken by our sin. But Jesus came to destroy sin. And not only to destroy sin, but to claim you and take you and pull you out of it one day. And he came to save you. And we're all buried in our sin. We all have this sickness called sin, which leads to death. But Jesus Christ says, "I'm the cure." We all are burdened by this, and Jesus says, "I'm going to liberate you. I'm going to make your mind. I'm going to remove you from the kingdom of darkness. I'm going to adopt you and make you kings and queens in the kingdom of heaven, in the kingdom of the beloved Son." He says, "I'm going to come and I'm going to make things different. I'm going to make you a child of God. I'm going to make you to where whenever you pray, when you pray, you're going to address God as Father. You're going to think of him like your dad because he is your dad, and you're going to call him dad, and he's going to call you son, or he's going to call you daughter." And You're going to pray for His will to be done instead of your own. You're going to say, God, this earth's all messed up. It's all screwed up. I don't want any part of this. I read about your throne room being full of steadfastness and love and peace and joy. And that's what I want for this earth. Not my will, Father, but yours be done. He said, I'm molding you. I'm making you. I'm creating you into this sanctified, holy, rolling person. That's what I want you to be. But you have this little thing called sin in your life, and I had to change that. And He wants to get us to the point to where when we see that death dangled in front of us, when we see that marshmallow laced with rat poison sitting in front of us, we say, whoa, I don't want no part of that. See, before you met Jesus Christ, you didn't even realize that you were partaking in death. But after He opened your eyes to it, when He opens your eyes to that, you see, I don't need to be a part of that. I don't want any part of that. And see, all of us face this. All of us see this temptation. All of us go through it each and every day of our lives. And hopefully Jesus Christ has opened your eyes to say, hey, that's something I don't need to partake of. And that's what Jesus Christ is molding us and sanctifying us and making us into a people that we say, when we see sin, we pray that I don't want a part of it. And that's exactly what we're talking about tonight. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Yet the reality of it is we all sin, and sin used to dominate us. That's our human nature. It's like this. It's like sin was the dictator in our lives from birth. It ruled our lives and controlled us. It was a dictator. Jesus Christ comes in, He topples the dictator. He topples sin, knocks it down. Here's the thing, though. Sin is not completely wiped out. That won't happen until the day of Jesus Christ coming back and you being made perfect in eternity with Him. Sin is still there. It's not completely, it's removed. It's no longer your master. You're no longer a slave to sin. But it's still there. And because it's still there, it still likes to run its mouth. That dictator still thinks that he's in control, and he likes to run his mouth, and he likes to dangle things in front of you, and he likes to point you in a direction away from what God would like for you to do. And so last week we prayed, forgive us our debts, we forgive our debtors, and that was very much themed toward our past sins, and forgive us of our past sins and what we screwed up. But tonight, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil is us praying in preparation for the future mistakes that we will make, the future temptations that will come. That's us praying and getting our hearts ready to face that. So lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. That's what we're talking about. But let's talk about temptation here. That's what I want to hit hard tonight is temptation. I want to talk about it. I want to hit it really hard and just dive into what temptation really is. And I want to explain to you how temptation works. I want to explain to you how our enemy uses temptation as a tactic and how the way it goes about to trick you and to fool you and to get you away from your walk with Christ. And that's what we're going to talk about. Have any of you ever read the book, The Odyssey? A couple of you? And some of you may have seen the movie. Well, anyway, if you haven't read it yet, you probably should read it in high school, I think. That's what I read it at, was in high school. But anyway, in the book, The Odyssey, This guy named Ulysses is going across on a ship, and he's making a journey. And throughout this journey, he comes across several different obstacles and enemies and that kind of thing. One of them is a cyclops, you know, the big thing with the one eye. Yeah, he comes across one of those, and the cyclops is big and huge and has a club, and he like just beats it like he just tears stuff apart. And that's one of the enemies he faces, and it was a very deadly enemy. But one of the other enemies he faced was even more deadlier than that, and it was completely a different tactic and a different form of an enemy. And what it was called the sirens. Some say sirens, but sirens. And what they would do is it was like a group of women that were on this island. And these sailors would be sailing by, and these sirens would sing songs to them. And this island was surrounded by rocks, and every sailor that ever, you know, sailed past there, they would hear these songs, and they would almost go into they'd be hypnotized by these women, and it's just the lure of these women all on this island, and it was a lure, and it drew them, and despite all they knew about sailing, they would steer their ships directly toward the island and sail right into the rocks and destroy themselves and kill themselves. They would be lured away and they would sail directly into destruction. And that's how our enemy works. I mean, sure, he can come and crush you like a cyclops. But he knows that there's a lot easier way to do it, and that's to tempt you and to lure you with things so that you destroy yourself, so that you get directed directly towards self-destruction. And he does it in just a lot of different little ways. But like I told you earlier, we have this dictator in our lives called sin. Jesus Christ comes in, knocks him off, and that dictator still likes to run his mouth. He still likes to talk it up and still likes to lure you with things. And that's this tactic. And because you have this little voice in your head, this little human nature, this little thing I like to call the flesh, it just cries out and always wants you to do the opposite of what your spirit tells you to do, you are in a battle. The Christian walk is now a battle. That's what it is. You cannot assume it's anything other than that. You don't assume that just because you're a Christian, life's going to get easier. It's an easy button you hit. It's not a get out of hell free card. It's not all those things. It's actually going to be hard. It's going to be tough. It's going to be work. It's going to be a battle. It's just like fighting. And the thing is, you're fighting evil. That's what you're doing. You're fighting evil. And because you're fighting evil, and because you're going through this, and you're all these things, we have to look at it from an aspect of war. That's what I want to go with this. I want you to think about war and think about how war works and how people strategize and plan for war. And that's how our enemy fights against us. He strategizes. He doesn't just come in and just beat you up and go. He strategizes in order to get you away from your walk with Christ. There's a Chinese general, and I can't remember his name, but he wrote a very famous book. It's called The Art of War. And in this book, he has a chapter that he talks about how to beat the enemy before they ever get on the battlefield. And that's really what the book is kind of about. It's about beating the enemy before they ever step foot on the battlefield. And this is a quote from his book. He says, entice away the enemy's best and wisest, that he may be left without counselors. Introduce traitors to his country, that the government may be rendered futile. Form an intrigue of deceit, so that the dissension between his rulers causes deterioration among his men. Corrupt his morals with insidious gifts, leading him to excess. Disturb and unsettle his mind by presenting him with lovely women. So the art of war is not even about the actual battle. It's about what happens before you hit the battlefield. And this is exactly, I'm going to compare what he just said, those things he said, to how sin works against us. It says, distance him from counsel. And that's exactly what sin and the devil would like to do to you. He wants to get you away from people with good counsel. He wants to get you out of the church. He wants to get you away from pastors. He wants to get you away from youth ministers. He wants to get you away from those good Christian friends that hold you accountable. He wants to distance you from the people in your life that care about you. He wants to distance you from the people that say that have the best interest, your best interest at heart, that will give you good advice. He wants to distance you from those people. It says, send in traitors that will lead him to defeat. And these kind of go hand in hand. He'll send in people that you think are your friends. He'll send in people that you think are the coolest and just the most awesome people ever. But you'll find that they're not quite like the friends that you go to church with. They're not the same kind of people. They're the ones that like to go out and live it up on the weekends and do things that you wouldn't normally do. But these people are so cool and they've accepted you. You're now kind of popular and you have a friend group that wants you to be a part. And the thing of it is, they were sent to you to just pull you further away from those good friends, to pull you further away from the church, to pull you further away from your walk with God. Next it says, get him hooked on excess, insidious gifts, things to waste his money and energy on. That right there, to me, that's idolism. He'll send in something, a guy or a girl or money or a materialistic thing or a sport. He'll send something in to take hold of your heart, to replace God, And because you're now away from the people that would give you good advice, and you're hanging with people that would give you bad advice, now it's that much easier once you get this materialistic thing in your life to just kind of push God off to the side. Push him off to the back burner. You don't really need him anymore because you got your friend group. And you have this new thing in your life that you just love. Idols. He'll send in idols to take our attention, our money, and our energy away from our relationship with Jesus Christ. Last one is lure him with lust so he will be defeated before he sets foot on the battlefield. And that's exactly how sin and temptation works against us. It will lure you away with lust, pride, envy. It will throw all these little things in there, and coupled with all the other things that we just went over, is a recipe for whenever temptation dangles in front of you. Because you're away from church, you're away from your good friends, you're hanging out with the bad crowd, and because you have all these other things and your walk with Christ has been pushed to the back burner and you don't hardly ever talk to him anymore. Because of all that, whenever that temptation comes up, you say, well, it's not that bad. It's just one time. And you look around and you have nobody to tell you that it's a bad idea. Because you're out on an island by yourself. You ever heard the term safety in numbers? It hits hard right there because you realize that temptation is dangling in front of you. And you know that in the back of your mind that something, I shouldn't be doing that. But you have nobody to argue with. You're independent. You're by yourself. You have some friends now that you've made that would agree that you need to do that. It'd be fun. It'll feel good. You'll have the time of your life. But suddenly, that temptation doesn't seem so bad anymore, which we enter right into temptation. We enter right into sin, and it's no big deal to us. No big deal at all. So, how do we fight temptation? This thing, Scott, how do I keep that from happening? How do I keep the temptation from overtaking me like you're talking about right now? How do I do that? Well, I think Jesus tells us exactly how to do that in Matthew chapter 26. And I'm not going to have you turn there. It's not going to be on the screen. I'm not even going to read it. I'm just going to kind of give you the story. Matthew 26 is the Last Supper, the garden, Jesus being arrested, that chapter. And at the Last Supper, Jesus knew what was fixing to happen. It wasn't taking him by surprise. He knew what was about to happen because he told the disciples what was fixing to happen. He said, one of you will betray me. One of you will betray me. He said, Peter, you're going to deny me 3 times. You're going to deny me. And you're all going to scatter and deny me, and you're all going to have nothing to do with me. You're going to scatter and run like cowards. He told them what was happening up front. Then he led them into the garden. He led them into the garden. And this is the same garden. This is right before he got arrested. This is where he prayed with drops of blood. He sweated blood. That's how intense this prayer was. And he's praying that Father, this cup passed from me. And at this point, I fully believe that this is, later on he says, well, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. I fully believe Jesus Christ was facing one of the biggest temptations in his life. Because he was a man, guys. He was fully God and fully man. So he felt temptation. He felt things just like you did. He knows what it's like to be tempted. He was tempted in the desert in Matthew chapter 4 by the devil. He knows what it's like to be tempted. And I think he faced one of the hardest decisions and one of the hardest tests of temptation he ever had to face, because he was sitting there and he was looking. And it wasn't even so much about the pain of the cross. It was the pain of he was fixing to be betrayed by his people. One of his best friends was fixing to give him up. All the people that followed him were fixing to leave him. He was fixing to be all alone, and he was fixing to take on the sins of mankind. And it would have been very easy to say, nah, I'm not going through with it. It's not going to happen. But he was fighting, and he was saying, you know what? I have a job to do. And he's praying with drops of blood. And this is what he told the disciples to do with him while he took them there. He led them into this situation. And he told them, he said, watch and pray that you may not enter into temptation. He just gave you the formula for how to fight temptation. To watch and to pray. See, what does he mean by watch? He already told the disciples. He already told them what was fixing to happen. He let them know that what was fixing to go on, and then he led them into the situation that they were in, and he told them to watch and pray because he didn't want them to be, whenever he came to be, when he got was going to get arrested, he didn't want them to be caught off guard. He wanted to let them know that, hey, this is fixing to happen. So you watch and you pray. So when the moment comes, it won't take you off guard. And that's what he means by watch. Guys, you got to know situations. You got to realize, don't put yourself in a situation to where temptation will overcome. Be aware. If you're sitting there thinking, Friday night on the couch, the lights are off, parents are asleep, watching a movie, laying down, I never knew it would lead to that. Yeah, okay, sure. Guys, put yourself in situations that give you the favor to overcome temptation. You got to know that whenever you're alone with your boyfriend or your girlfriend, that kind of thing may come up. That kind of thing might happen. You've got to know that. You got to watch for that. If you're going out to a party and you don't plan on drinking, you don't plan on doing nothing like that, but when you get to that party, you have to know that when you go to that party, that you're going to be offered. You're going to be asked. You got to know that. You got to watch out for that. And when you watch, you're watching out for that, and when you're praying and you're reading your Bible and you're establishing this communication with God, what you're going to do is whenever you see the situations pop up, you're going to say, I don't need to be in this situation. I don't need to do this. And what's going to happen is when that situation does arrive and temptation is dangling in front of you and that marshmallow is placed right in front of you, what you're going to do is next, after you've watched, after you know it's coming, you're not caught off guard, oh, I didn't know that was going to happen. After you know what's going to happen and you know what's coming, that's when you pray. You watch for it, you wait for it, you watch for it. Okay, it's popped up now. I really want, this dictator's telling me, just do it. And I really want to do it, but I know I don't need to. God, will you help me? Help me right now. I need help. I can't do it right now because the spirit's willing, but the flesh is weak, and the flesh is crying out, and the flesh is saying, please, just give me a little bit of that. Just give me a portion of that. And you pray, and you say, God, help me. You say, God, I need your help. And this is how God helps you. Let me just, 1 Corinthians 10:13 says, no temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. So right there we know that everybody's going to be tempted, and it's common amongst human, the race of mankind. It's common. God is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. But with temptation, he will also provide a way of escape, that you may be able to endure it. This is what Christ does. You're asking him for help. You realize the situation. You've been watching. It didn't take you off guard. You knew it was coming. It's hit you now. What do? You start praying. You're saying, God, help me. I need your help. I need your help. And what this is like is doing, it's like temptation is beating down your door, and it's trying to break in. And you're in your house, and you're thinking, what am I going to do? And you start praying to God. And you're praying to God. And what he does is the door flings open, and the temptation's coming in, and Jesus Christ comes in and pushes them back out, and he's holding the door, and he's holding the door at bay. He's holding temptation back, and he's saying, hey, go out the window. That window right there. Go, get out. I'm holding them back. There's your way of escape. There it is right there. Take it. Now, it's up to you to take that way of escape. When temptation hits you, and you hit your knees, asking God to help, it says right there, that he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability, but with temptation, he will also provide a way of escape. You pray to him, he'll give you the way to escape. He'll give you the means to escape. He'll show you the window to jump out of, to escape temptation. You just got to be open, and you got to be watching. But the thing of it is, we all face this temptation. We all go through this. And it's hard. I know it's hard. Because it's harder for y'all because you haven't hit the point yet where you realize that, I don't know if y'all realize this, I know the people that graduated high school can amen me on this, but when you're in high school, you think that that has, like that's the world. That you don't know what's going to happen. It's just everything is just about right now. Everything's about what happens. But when you graduate, guys, you realize high school is really nothing. It's really not that big of a deal. I can tell you, I talked to one guy. I talked to one person that I graduated with, and I graduated with 250 people. And he didn't graduate with me. He was a year younger than me. He's my best friend. That's the only reason we're still in touch. You don't talk to the same people. You meet new friends at college. The people that are kind of on the, you know, nerdy or you feel like you don't fit in high school, you're going to fit in college. You're going to find a group that's just like you, and you're going to fit in when you get to college. But I can tell you, through high school and through college, you're going to be faced with a lot of stuff. You're going to get offered things. You're going to get told things. You're going to be shown things that's going to be, it's going to blow your mind, and you're just going to be like, whoa, what, I don't know about this. And guys, I can promise you right now, it will defeat you and it will beat you because it defeated me. Alcohol, it defeated me. That was it for me. Partying, the party lifestyle. I lived for seeing how drunk I could get because I felt like that made me cool in the eyes of my fellow baseball players and my fellow friends. I thought that was something to brag about. But all I was doing was eating marshmallows laced with rat poison. That's all I was doing. And I just want you to realize that right now it may seem like I need to do this in order to fit in. Guys, hold on to Christ. Hold on to your walk. Hold on to God. And as you grow in your walk with God, He will bring you friends that will please Him. He will bring you friends together that will help lift you up and help lift you closer to Christ, and you will all grow in Christ together. You don't have to be a partier to be happy. You don't have to be, you know, this wild keg stand person. You don't have to be this sex icon. You don't have to be like that. Now, TV will paint you a different story, but the gospel of Jesus Christ will paint you the true story. And I pray that through this message, you realize that it's not worth it. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. It feels good. It's fun. It's awesome. I'll go ahead and tell you, it's awesome to participate in those things. It feels great. I've been there. But I can tell you right now, it's not worth the pain. It's not worth the hurt. It's not worth all those things because in the end, it leads to death. When it's all said and done, it leads straight to the grave. And all those things, the partying, the sex, the pornography, the lying, the cheating, all those things will drop you at the doorstep of death. Whenever you walk from this life into the next life, you can't take being the partier with you. You can't take being the most macho guy with you. You can't take being the prettiest girl with you. You can't take all that stuff. It's not going with you. I tell you what, though. Jesus Christ will be with you in this life. And when you take that step, He overcame death. So therefore, you take Him into the next life. And you get to be with Him. And you get to worship with Him. And you get to worship Him. And you get to have that relationship that we all long for. So don't let temptation and sin lure you into your own self-destruction. Don't let it do it to you.
For more information on Breakthrough Ministries, follow us on Twitter at BreakthroughMI or visit our blog at www.breakthroughministry.wordpress.com.
Hey guys, this is Scott. Just wanted to kind of wrap things up from last night and kind of give you my thoughts on the service, and it was just one of those nights. And what I mean by that is we didn't have as many as we usually have here, and a lot of times that can be discouraging, but it was everybody that was here came with like a heart
of worship, and they came with a focus to give God their all, and because of that, the atmosphere of worship was just on another level. It was just one of those nights that just we're always going to remember, because just the willingness to worship and the willingness just to give God the glory and to praise Him. It was unbelievable. Huge, tip of the hat to our worship band. They did great. You know, they did great picking out the songs. They did great executing the songs. So, Anna and Abby and Colton, y'all did a great job. Just want to give y'all a praise about that. Y'all did a great job and really led us in worship and. It was just a great atmosphere, and it was a great time. And it was one of those different kind of messages for me. I had everything kind of wrote out in my notes and had this kind of plot of how I was going to go about this. But about midways through, I kind of just threw my notes to the side somewhat, and I just kind of went with it. I just kind of let the Spirit lead, in the direction that I felt like, it wanted me to go, and it was a different kind of message, because I usually don't do that kind of thing, but I felt the need to just really be real last night, as opposed to just, I try to be real every week, and I feel like that's what, it's easy to be receptive if somebody's really real with you. And I try to be real every week, but I just felt like in order to get this message across about sin and temptation and how that really works and how it really plots against us, I had to be completely honest and be completely real from the start. And I felt like, I was able to get away from my notes and get away from the structure that I had. And I was able to allow the Lord to use me in a very real way that spoke to the young people. And I think I thank God for that. I thank Him giving me the words to say so that it speaks right to the heart of the people that were listening, the young people that were listening. And I just wanted to hit on some things on about temptation and just kind of wrap this whole thing up. And J.C. Ryle once said this: "What would you expect? Sin will not come to you saying, 'I am sin.' It would do little harm if it did. Sin always seems good and pleasant and desirable at the time of commission." And that's so true. Sin is not going to come up and just say, "Hey, I'm sin." Because any Christian is going to say, "Oh, you're sin? Well, I kind of knew that. But since you just brought it right up like that, I'm going to resist you because I know that's what I need to do." Sin's not going to come up and be like, "Hey, I'm sin. How's it going? Partake in this." And you're going to be like, "Oh, okay." It's not going to be like that. It's always going to seem like the right thing. It's always going to seem good. It's always going to seem pleasant and desirable. And you can go back to the garden, when Eve was tempted, the serpent made it seem like it was going to be good and pleasant and desirable. But in turn, it led to the fall of mankind. And that's the way He's worked from the get-go. He's sneaky, he slides around on his belly, and that's the way that he's ripped his role from day one. It's been to be sneaky and sly and make things seem like they're good and they're pleasant and desirable, but in the long run, it's just nothing but death. It just pays in death. And as a Christian, you have to be aware of this. You have to know that this kind of thing is happening. You have to know that He is a snake and he is deceitful, and He's going to make you think that things are good. He's not going to come to you showing you the ugliness of it. He's not going to come to you and show you the nastiness of it. He's going to come at you at an angle that makes you say, "Oh, okay, maybe this really isn't that bad. Maybe it's really not that bad. Maybe other people are just kind of blowing this out of proportion. It's kind of innocent. It's really nothing major. I'm only going to do it once, maybe a couple of times. I only do it once a week. I only do it, you know, every now and then. It's not really that big of a deal, but the reality of it is, why it seems good and pleasurable and desirable and delicious and tasteful at that time, ultimately, in the end, it leads to death. And that's the reality of this. And because you have to know this is going to happen, you have to make up your mind what you're going to do before the situation arises. Before that temptation comes, you have to be able to recognize it. And you have to be able to know that it is coming. And you have to be prepared beforehand, or else you'll always make the bad decision. You'll always make the worst decision. And it's kind of like when Nebuchadnezzar, you know, took Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. When he took them, you know, like the story of Daniel, for instance, it says in the Bible that Daniel purposed in his heart that he would serve the Lord. See, long before King Darius made that decree, long before all of this, Daniel had found a place in a relationship with God. He found a place to pray every day. He found a place to worship God every day, and he established a prayer line. He established a line of communication with God. And he determined, no matter what happened, no matter what he faced, that he had purposed in his heart that he would serve the Lord. In the same way with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you know, they say, you know, we're not going to bow down and worship your statue. We're not going to do that. And Nebuchadnezzar says, okay, well, I'll throw you in the furnace. That'll be fine. And it says that he heated it 7 times hotter than normal. And you have to think about this. This wasn't a gas furnace. This was not a you just cut the knob up and you wait 10 minutes and it's just hotter. In order for these flames to be this hot and for this furnace to get 7 times hotter, it took literally hours to stoke the flame, to stoke the coals and build up that heat to the point of 7 times hotter. So this didn't happen over a matter of just moments. And it says that his face become distorted with anger at these 3 boys. And you have to think about that. They said, no, we're not going to bow down. We're not going to do that. We're going to serve our God. And they had every opportunity. They're sitting there for hours watching Nebuchadnezzar, and they're watching him just get so angry, and they're watching the furnace heat. It would have been very easy for them at any point to say, you know what, okay, I will bow down. But no, they had purposed in their heart that they would serve their God. If they would have waited to make that decision at the furnace, they would have backed out. If Daniel would have waited to make that decision when he was about to be thrown in the lion's den, he would have backed out. So in the same way with your walk, you have to be prepared. You have to know that getting in the back seat with your girlfriend or your boyfriend, you have to know that you're putting yourself in a situation that is going to lead to something that's undesirable in God's eyes. You have to know that. You can't wait till you're in the back seat to make the decision. You have to purpose in your heart beforehand that when temptation comes up, that you're going to resist it. And that's what I talked about with watching. Watching. And the other part of that was praying. You have to establish that prayer line. Without that prayer line, without that communication, you're going to give in because you have no reason not to. It's everything in your human nature says, partake. Partake in this sin, partake in this temptation. It's not that bad. But that's where you have to be watching for it, and you have to pray that God will create in you a strength and create in you a desire to say, you know what? I've purposed in my heart, I will serve God. I will serve my God. And the thing of it, Charles Spurgeon once said this, Satan promises the best, but pays with the worst. He promises honor and pays with disgrace. He promises pleasure and pays with pain. He promises profit and pays with loss. He promises life and pays with death. But God pays as he promises. All his payments are made in pure gold. And that's the reality of all this. When you are watching for your temptations to come at you, when you know they're going to come, because they're going to come, when you're watching out for them and you recognize them and they don't catch you off guard and you hit your knees and you pray, when you're doing that, you have to realize that Satan is going to promise you all these things. When that temptation is thrown up in your face, it's going to seem good. It's going to seem desirable. It's going to seem pleasant. But you have to know that's Satan talking. That's the devil. That's that old snake, that old coward, that old liar that's been doing it since day one. And when he promises the best, it may seem like the best, but it pays with the worst. He promises you honor, it pays with disgrace. He promises pleasure, and it pays with pain. He promises profit, and it pays with loss. He promises life, and it will pay with death. But when you resist that temptation, when you say, no, I don't want any part of that, and you ask God to help you, and it's going to be hard. I'm not saying that's going to be easy, and it's going to be like, God help me, and he just removes the temptation. It's not like that. I told you, you know, in the podcast and in the service that he's going to hold the temptation back. When you ask him to help, he's going to hold it back, and he's going to show you the way out, and you're going to have to take that way out. And whenever you realize that temptation, while it seems desirable, that's your flesh crying out. That's nothing but your flesh saying, hey, let me find pleasure. Let me have a taste of that delicious temptation. And then you have to realize that the flesh is very weak. The flesh is cursed from day one. And that coward, that liar, Satan, that snake, this dangling that apple in front of you, he's nothing but a coward. He's nothing but a liar. And the only thing he has to offer you is death. It's death. Thanks for listening, guys. Next week, we're going to have a special guest speaker. Mr. Tyler Tingle will be presenting us with a message. So I'm looking forward to that. And for more information on Breakthrough Ministries, you can visit our blog at www.breakthroughministry.wordpress.com. Or again, you can follow us on Twitter at BreakthroughMI. That's about all I got for this week. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. And God bless. Jesus saves. Y'all have a good one. See y'all next week.